Today, what's really going on under the hood? Let's go down the rabbit hole. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. At the moment, we have some work going on in the studio with the power systems being upgraded and also the fibre connections are replaced as well. So we're off air real time. However, there are more than 5,000 shows in the DFA archive, and I guess that many of you won't necessarily have caught up with some of the really good ones. So what I'm doing is I'm going to replay some classic episodes over the next few days that really get to the heart of some of the critical issues that have driven my thinking over the last few years. So today I'm going to play my first down the rabbit hole conversation with my friend George. This was recorded some years ago again, but there is a really important kernel in the discussion here about what is truth, who defines what truth is, and how do we know the difference between truth and lies? And as George says, yeah, you can't necessarily believe what you're being told. It was very relevant in 2020 when we recorded the show. It's even more relevant now. George, hello, good to see you.
Hello, Martin, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good. And like I say, we spend a fair amount of time down rabbit holes, don't we?
We do. It was fascinating how I came to meet you because both you and John Adams really caught my attention. And I remember calling you up and talking to you about what I thought of central banking around the world. But for today, I thought rather than actually talk about central banking and problems that we're facing economically in Australia and around the world, I thought to start off, we would talk about clear thinking and how we come to kind of believe what we see in the media, what we're taught at school, etc. And so I came to the conclusion that if we can actually get across to the viewers the idea of questioning what is told to them, they need to be able to answer truthfully to themselves whether or not something that's told to them can be proven factually.
Right. So it's what I think you're getting at, and this is something, I'm a philosopher, right? By training through university, I actually am a philosopher, and I actually very nearly went into academic research after completing my degrees. But the fundamental point here is what's called the frame of reference, right? Everybody carries around in their heads a little model as the way that the world actually works, right? It's basically, you absorb it from your parents, you absorb it from the experiences that you have, all the things that you consume, be it media or everything else. But there is an implicit model. And most people never stop to think about what that model is and how it actually functions and how it determines the way you see things, right? And so one of the things that philosophy does is to try to strip away that and highlight some of the assumptions that people actually have. And once you start doing that in the financial sector or elsewhere, you reach some quite amazing and quite interesting conclusions. But I think your point would be, yeah, that's precisely it. And even when you're a kid, you start getting indoctrinated.
Well, that's the point. And I remember when I was, my parents brought me up a particular way. Let's just say, I think of people like a computer. You buy a computer and you put an operating system in it. And then from there, you add your programs.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, there is this big debate about nature versus nurture, right? So how much of it is actually innate and how much of it is overlaid, right? And the truth is nobody quite knows because it's some combination, right? But what is true is that you will actually absorb from your environment, from your parents, from your surroundings, a basic set of assumptions about the way the world is. And in fact, then through perhaps the education process, you might or might not be able to actually test some of those things, but you are still carrying that baggage. And very often people continue to carry that baggage forever because they never stop and question it.
I've got a friend of mine that we meet once a week and we talk about the world and all sorts of things. And he said, George, you might want to ask a few questions. And I was curious anyhow, so I thought, I think it's about time I did. So I went, since 2011, I've been researching. My daughter thinks I'm a troller on the computer. And what I found out as I was researching is that things didn't make sense. The stories told to us by our media, by our education system, they didn't make sense. And I thought, well, hang on, if they don't make sense, what's the reason behind all this? There must be a reason.
So can you give, George, like, can you give me an example of something that doesn't make sense, just so people can sort of get inside your head a bit?
Well, okay. For example, how did the banks get to the point where they actually almost brought down the American economy in 2008? Mm. And, of course, later on the media started to report on what was going on and we found out there was a subprime, etc. But up until this whole crash happened, the media and everything was saying everything is fine, nothing to see here, everything's great, and then we have this crash. And then I thought, well, hang on a second, what just took place here? Hmm. We've almost brought down the whole American economy because of a subprime situation.
Well, what's interesting about that is that before the crash, there were only a very few people saying, we've got a problem, right? Most people within the system, be central bankers, be the media, be pretty much everybody else looking in, didn't see an issue. And in fact, I remember listening to a couple of very senior politicians in the UK talking about the longest ever boom for the financial services sector and how the UK economy was thriving on this massive financialization, right? And that this was the future, right? And that was 6 months before the whole thing blew up.
I'm not an economist. I don't understand economics. But what I see here, and I describe the situation of central banks around the world printing together at the moment. This is what's happening around the world. And both you and John agreed with me. I thought, okay, well, I can understand that. Why isn't the media bringing this out for us to all hear? And then I start to realise, well, hang on a second, now I'm bringing into question the media. And everything I believed in the media, I'm starting to bring into question now. Can the viewers honestly tell you and me or their friends, can they prove that what they believe is factual? It's simple. Can you prove it? If somebody says banks create money, which creates jobs, which helps create businesses, etc., and they're a good thing, well, on the surface, it seems that way. And, of course, we're born to parents who are born to their parents who've been trained by their parents and so on and so on. And then I know my parents, they came from a place called Cyprus in the Mediterranean. And, of course, they came out of a war-torn Cyprus. So they came to Australia and they said, my God, this is honey, you know, the land of milk and honey, as the Americans would say it. And they thought, all we've got to do is just send our kids to school. They'll become lawyers and doctors. And everything will be rosy and they'll live happily ever after. And their intentions were good. The reality is that we're not all born to be lawyers and doctors and pharmacists and dentists and you name it. So anyhow, from there, so we then go to school and suddenly we've got to deal with an education system. And you go along and you learn how to read and write and you eventually get to high school and then they start talking about all sorts of things. You're going to go into economics, you're going to go into arts, you're going to become teachers, lawyers, doctors. There's a whole lot of opportunities and you're told, just go out there and study and do your best and be the best you can be at what you're doing. I thought, well, this makes sense. So what do? I look at the education system, I look around at all my friends and the world and I say, well, what they've told us must be right because it works. I can see lawyers, I can see doctors, I can see teachers. We're all working. But then I thought, well, they didn't really give us a great deal of detail when they taught us about inflation. Inflation was taught to me like this. There's push-pull inflation and pull-push inflation. I thought, okay, so workers will ask for more money. That'll push up the prices. Therefore, we have inflation. Or somebody will put the price up of something, or, you know, prices around the GDP, et cetera, or the world, the Australian economy will suddenly have a thing called inflation. And then, of course, workers will say, well, we need more money, and that will balance everything. And I thought, oh, that sounds sensible. And looking at the system again, you just cross-check and you look around. You go, your friends are all in agreement and you're in agreement. We're all agreeing with each other because we can see the system seems to work the way they tell us. Well, you go on a few years and a few years and you suddenly realise somewhere down the track, hang on a second, because I remember 2008 and I thought, something significant happened here. And then I thought, what happened? What happened was there was a crash, people lost, and for losers, there are winners. Therefore, we've got a situation where an economic crash transfers wealth from one group to another, if the group knows. Some people might refer to this as insider trading, something that people probably heard about on your show somewhere along the line.
Yeah, well, there was a guy called Michael Hudson. I don't know whether you saw that show, but I interviewed him about two weeks ago. Yeah, I mean, Michael is renowned. He's 81, I think, now. But he made that point precisely, that what's happened is, again and again, is that through a crisis, there is a wealth transference. And the wealth transference continues always towards the 1% or the 10%. In other words, the people at the top of the system, the people with all the financial resources. And what that means is that the middle class and the working class are effectively hollowed out. And he also goes on to say, and do you realize what that means? Because every time you do that, basically more and more money gets poured in at the top, as it were, and that actually leaves less and less and less for the rest of society, which is why we have very low levels of wage growth. We have significant amounts of poverty in places that you wouldn't expect to see it. So he keeps highlighting this fundamental structural discontinuity that we have based on the few versus the many.
The first thing they've got to be able to do is stop and question.
Yeah.
They need to do that, because if they don't, then they're going to fall back to their default position, their preconceived default position, and they're not going to ask the question.
No. And it's worth, if you go down that, George, one of the interesting things is that the media has a frame of reference, right? They have a set of assumptions and a way of thinking about the world and a way of communicating. So not only should you be thinking about your own frame of reference, your own assumptions, but you've also got to think about those who are actually communicating to you and about the implicit assumptions that they hold as well.
Well, that's true. And to give an example of that, there's a media group in the US. They own over 30% of the media across the US.
Mm.
And if you go on YouTube and you look them up, you'll see them making a report. And each anchor person, the newsreader, they call it, which is an anchor person, will put out the news headline for the evening news. And then they show another anchor person in another station, and then another, and then another. And before you know it, the whole screen's full of multiple images of all these people saying the same thing from different TV networks. Now, part of the reason I think that works is because most people don't go surfing through every single channel. So they don't have a reference. They can't see it unless they go searching. And let's face it, I think Australians are so busy working, trying to pay their mortgages and trying to keep up with their bills, etc., they don't have time to go and search on the internet. And when they get home, they're tired and they've got their families, and then they look forward to their weekend if they get there. And look at us now. Right now we're living through this situation around the world, this virus that we've got. I noticed as time went on, you talk about something and a response like this would come back at you. Well, everybody knows. And I thought, hang on a second. How can everybody know? And how can we, and you're assuming that we can't, there's no need to ask questions here. Just go along with what we believe and don't rock the boat. So now we get to a spot where if you do ask questions and you don't have the answers, well, it's up to you. You're going to go searching for the answers now, or you're just not going to bother. Now, there's a comedian in America called George Carlin. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's quite popular. Check him out if you get a chance. But he goes on and he's quite derogatory of the political system, of a lot of things. And he says one thing. He says the problem with Americans today is they just don't think. Now, he's being quite broad in what he's saying, but I get what he's saying. He's saying that maybe we have a situation here where people have accepted the narrative coming from the government, from the mainstream media, and they go along with everything. We have this two-party political system majority. I mean, we've got the Greens in Australia as well, but a two-party preferred system, and you can choose red or blue, whichever colour, whatever. And then we've got a situation where not only do you have that choice now, but in having the choice, you've created division. And there's a term, divide and conquer. And you think, hang on, so the people are not united, they're divided. And in so doing, now they argue over their political aspirations, and they don't no longer actually take the time to look and see, is there a similarity between these two parties? Is there something that links them? That's what came to my mind. Mm. Something that was common between both the Labor Party and Liberal Party of this country, and for that matter, you could go around the world. And what I came to the conclusion was, I can see one thing that links them, and that was banking. And a friend of mine said, I told this to a very sceptical friend of mine. I said, look, the Labor Party and the Liberal Party are as one. And he said, oh, no, George, the Labor Party cares about the little man. The Liberal Party only cares about big business. And I said, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but they're one in the same. And he said, how so? And I said, they both promote debt. And he said, how? And I said, well, the Liberal Party promotes private debt and the Labor Party promotes public debt. So we've got the lever of going into debt back and forward. Liberal, private, Labor, public. And he said, oh, that's a good point. And I said, I don't see how creating debt for the sake of creating debt is necessarily good for anybody, except for one group. That'd be the banking system. And he said, oh, that's a good point. And I said, look, I don't expect you to agree with me. What I expect you to do is just go and do a little bit of research and you might just see what I'm talking about. Mm. A couple of weeks later, he came back to me and said, you're spot on. He said, I can see it now. And I said, well, of course, now you can see it because you've taken the time to see it. So we have this situation where the people are divided. And of course, this leads on to other things like, okay, is our education system designed to benefit us? Or is it really designed to benefit somebody else? And I began to kind of look at that and I thought, well, my education system never took me down this path of questioning things to this level. And I started to realise, well, I think we've got a situation here. We've got a situation where we can't clearly think because we've become quite conditioned in our thinking to think a particular way. So that makes it very hard. It's almost like putting a blindfold in front of somebody and saying, don't worry, trust me, you can walk across the road. I know you can hear traffic. You won't get run over. I promise you. Mm. So you walk across the road and a truck comes past, to put forward an analogy, and you say, that didn't work very well. Oh, well, you didn't take the time to listen, you see. Well, you never told me about listening or you never warned me about this. And so you go on through life making these mistakes, eventually get to my age and say, I'm sick of making these mistakes. So you start to realise there's something, as they say, you know, the old term, something rotten in Denmark. We'll say it's Australia for now. And so now your head starts to say, okay, I've seen this happen. And as we get older, younger generations can't go back and see the older generations past. And a very common thing is for the younger generation to challenge the older generation. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. But the thing is, while they're challenging, they should also take into account, they may have something they can use in terms of life experiences. So they need to kind of, by all means, challenge the older generation because they do make their mistakes. But the new generation is going to make theirs as well.
Yeah, well, let me just come in there, George, because there's something which you said a little while ago about the fact that people are very busy and therefore they just go around with these assumptions in their head, right? I'd argue that there are two fundamental things that are part of that. The consumer society that we're part of, we're being thrown images all the time of consume more, consume more, consume more, consume more, right? And that is, I think, one of the angles as to why ideas get crowded out, because essentially it's all about, you know, the next great flashy thing you can go buy. It's the first point. The second one is, I actually think all of the streaming media and the fact that you can actually, you know, go and submerge yourself in box sets of this or that or something else, right, means that you can actually not have time to think about the more fundamental issues, because you can actually just waste whatever time you want watching whatever box set. I actually think it's part of the story, right? Because the fact of the matter is that those will themselves have a worldview contained within them. And when you're watching, I don't know, Netflix, for example, there are a set of implicit values that Netflix actually is connoting all the time. So if you're basically getting your ideas and, you know, your, all that exposure, again, what's happening is that there are behind the scenes, subliminally almost, a set of values that are flowing into your worldview and determining the way you see everything.
Yes, well, I did come across somebody on YouTube. His name was Yuri Brezhnev, and he spoke about, he was ex-KGB, and he spoke about what Secret Service, what they do in actual fact. He said a lot of people think we go around, we shoot people and so forth. He said, sometimes we do, but he said, the real agenda of Secret Service is to change society's thinking over a long period of time. And he said, you can get to the point where you can tell somebody, you can show them positive proof that something that they thought was the truth is a lie, and they will not believe you because they're so conditioned. Yep. That gets to the point where some of the viewers on this channel are going to be looking at this and saying, geez, these people are talking a lot of rubbish. And you say, we're not talking rubbish. We're actually asking the viewers to stop and ask questions, and then to clearly, if they can't get the answer to those questions, there's a problem. Now, yep. I can give an example. On a local radio station, ABC morning radio show, there was a man that called up about banking, told our radio host that it was creating money out of thin air. You and I do it, it's counterfeit, you go to jail. The bank does it, it has special drawing rights. And the radio host was saying, do you believe man walked on the moon? And I thought, and he said, what's man walking on the moon, a 50-year-old conspiracy, got to do with the fundamental situation and fact that banks produce money out of thin air? And this went on for a while, and then in the end, the radio host said, okay, we've had your call, and he was suggesting, why don't you ask the bankers that come on your show how they where they get their money and how they get it? And he said, well, you've had your call, and there's other callers waiting. So that was the end of that conversation. And I think what happens in the media, if they cannot win an argument, they will not have it. They'll simply cut it off and they'll move on. And this is the control. So if you think about our media and how much people rely on it to keep them informed, if it's being skewed, well, they're not being informed anymore. That now turns into propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to say, it's very interesting. If you start thinking about that and then asking about some of the associations, so for example, some of the TV stations have direct connection with the property sector, right? And therefore, not surprisingly, you quite often see a lot of very positively spun programs about how great property is. Now, that isn't just a happenstance. You know, there is actually deliberate connections being drawn to persuade people that actually, you know, go buy that next property, you know, be part of that. So almost
well, it creates a demand. Yeah. Because what happens is people look around again, as we always do. We all check to see what our neighbours are doing. We see them going to auctions and we see them bidding up the price. We see the media coming at us and saying, look, our prices on houses have jumped up 100,000 in 12 months on the average house. And you sit there thinking, my God, I better rush in. I'm going to miss out. And this creates what an old term, you've heard the term Ponzi scheme. It can.
Well, and you it might is. Think, it has. It may, yeah. may just about collapse. The other thing I wanted to say, though, is you make another really interesting point, right? Because if, as you and I are both saying, we're not trying to tell somebody that A is true or B is true, what we're saying is you need to ask the question about what you think, right? And so I would argue that DFA and what we're trying to do on the DFA channel is not provide a prepackaged answer to all of the questions, right? What we're trying to do is to pose questions, if you like, open people's minds to different perspectives. So there will be people on this channel, for example, who believe that big debt isn't a problem. You know, the MMT guys, we've interviewed them before. There are people who actually think that you know, gold is the way to go. There are people who think that property is always worth investing. So I've tried to paint a range of different views and opinions from different people, right? Rather than simply say, this is what you should think. Now, that's unusual for a YouTube channel, because in fact, quite a few of the YouTube channels that are out there are absolutely doctrinally aligned to a particular view. I'm not going to mention any specific channel, but there is one, for example, that I know quite well, that is quite well regarded, but they are fundamentally about pushing gold, right? So behind it, everything is about gold is the answer to your problem, right? And I'm just not in that game. So I'm in the game of helping people to recognize that there are questions that they need to ask. Another interesting example, I was talking to Steve Keen some time ago about this issue of the economic philosophy about the way that banks work, and, you know, the fact that we know banks do create money out of thin air. It's a ledger. They can do it as much as there are people who want to borrow, right? And yet, he will tell you, and I've seen it too, that pretty much all of central bankers all around the world don't agree with that philosophy. They don't think debt's important. They actually say, no, debt's not important, because every time you create more debt, you create an asset on the other side of the balance sheet and the two cancel each other out, so it's irrelevant, right? So there is a fundamental philosophical breakpoint between those two points. And Michael Hudson, going back to him again, he said, do you realize that economists who are not effectively in that neoliberal view,
yeah,
right, find it really difficult to get published. They find it really difficult to get established academic positions. So correct. Even in academia, the very center of what should be free and open, right, is actually just the same. So there's a set of implicit assumptions, yes, even in the academic environment as well.
Okay, so you've said that now, and I did mention education and to whose benefit.
Yeah.
And here's Michael Hudson saying that exactly what you've just said now about certain people don't get to go anywhere unless they fit the academic view, the neoliberal academic view, seems, in the world.
Yep.
And here we are, and it leaves us confused. Most people don't understand how banking works. They don't understand how the economy works. They trust the media. They trust the government. And when the wheels fall off, they go, oh, well, we didn't see that coming. So I've come to the conclusion that when I listen to people, I take the resources from several different points of view, and I use those different points of view to give me a full picture, because I don't believe one person has it. And when you do go looking and trolling through YouTube and Google, searching for things, well, first of all, understand that Google, YouTube and Facebook are corporate controlled, and for whose interest? Well, the corporations, of course. But the situation is nobody has the perfect answer. Your statistics are interesting, although you have to take them, what, from a government source?
I can take them from a range of sources, and of course I also collect primary data direct from households, right? And that's one of the reasons why I do it, because I didn't want to have second-hand data, as it were.
Okay, that's good that you explained that, because I think it's very important for the viewers to know that you're trying to get a balance, which I think is really good, and you mentioned that before. Yep. So I like that, and I think that out of all the people who are on who talk finance and so forth and the economy, you're certainly one of those that are in the group that I listen to. And I do listen to your channel quite regularly. It's amazing, the amount of information you put out is incredible. But it's a great channel. I think John Adams is onto something, although I don't think that John Adams has the total story. I think he's got part of it. I think that Michael Hudson has another part. Steve Keen has another part. When you put them all together, you will eventually start to see a picture form.
Yeah, well, George, look, I appreciate your time today. And, you know, just to sort of summarise, it's really important that people understand that there are a bunch of implicit assumptions that people go around with, right? And those implicit assumptions inform pretty much everything that goes on. It's really good to start asking the hard questions about why is it the way it is? What assumptions are there? What is the worldview and why is it that way, right? Because then you can begin to understand perhaps a little bit more about what's going on. And I think in the next episode, you're going to share with us perhaps your perspective based on the worldview that you've now been able to begin to pick apart. And I think that'll be a really interesting conversation. But thanks for your time today. And we'll catch up again for the next episode, down the rabbit hole once again.